You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, March 30th, 2015. You're listening to episode 148.
148, what?
Ooh-ah. My name's Rob, that's Jason, what?
I don't know.
What, Jason?
What, Rob?
What? Party on.
That's a terrible song, by the way.
What is what?
The what song?
I don't know. What in the what?
Yeah.
I said what in the what?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
Oh.
We don't need to sing the whole thing, though.
No, we don't. Nope. We do not.
If you don't know what song we're talking about, you need to just Google or YouTube search.
What in the... And your phone's ringing.
My phone's ringing.
Let's see what it is. Hello? Hello?
Speaking with Larry.
Larry?
Hello?
Yeah, you want to talk with Larry?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Can I speak with Larry?
There's no Larry here. I think you have the wrong number.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. That was not as good as I'd hoped it would be.
You should have been like, thank you for calling WBTG. You're live on the air. How's it going?
Yeah, that would have been...
You're caller number 10! Don't do that.
I won't do that.
That's actually... Yeah. They're like, what? I won? What did I win? Nothing. You know what? This reminds me of a Beastie Boys song.
What Beastie Boys song?
The Larry Routine.
The Larry...
Have you heard that? It's on... No. It's on their last album, like the last album they did.
Tell me how to block my recent calls.
So go to recent calls.
Yeah.
And pull that call up.
Okay.
And then way at the bottom is like block this contact. You click that and then they never talk to you again. Oh,
no, I tapped it and it...
Dialed.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the part of our show where Jason teaches...
Oh, block this call. There it is. I just did a little eye icon.
Rocket science.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. No, they have this, they do this song, like, it's called the Larry Routine, and I don't know what it comes from, but they're like, it basically goes, they're like, something, and my name is Jason Slingerland, but my new name is Larry, and then like, and then everyone does that, but they say Larry in a weird, funny way, like, that's the whole thing.
Yeah. Larry.
But they all say it, like, they all own it in their own way, right?
Oh.
So, it's called the Larry Routine. I don't know what it is, but they're the Beastie Boys.
I'm not going to criticize that. Sure. They know what they're doing.
Right. So.
They know what they're doing. All right. I have no idea where we left off.
There's one of the saddest famous people that died, by the way, when MCA died.
Yeah.
So it's like, there'll be no more Beastie Boys.
I know. It's tragic. It was super tragic.
Especially because, like, they'd hit, like, a resurgence again. Like, they'd kind of, like... not done as much, and then like they were super up again, like releasing new stuff, and they did that awesome movie video with where they had like Elijah Wood, Seth Rogen, and somebody else were the Beastie Boys. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't seen that.
Elijah
great.
Wood is Ad Rock lip syncing is one of the coolest things you'll ever see in your life. Like, he is so legit.
That sounds great.
I can't believe you haven't seen that.
No, I've never.
I'll look up the video, I'll send it to you. It's like a 30-minute movie, and 15 minutes of it is really good.
Okay.
And the rest is kind of weird.
Okay.
But yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And Leonard Nimoy and Terry Pratchett, man.
Yeah,
gosh. I'd pour a little out, but you have carpet here. So I don't want to.
Unless you're just drinking water.
Yeah. But I don't want to actually pour anything out.
If Nate Darty was here, we would.
Yeah. Whoa, zing. All over your floor.
Oh. Nate, are you coming to be? Are you coming to? Are you coming to?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Grand Con. Nate, you better be coming to Grand Con.
It's September, dude.
He's got kids now. He's got a plan.
Oh.
He's got a kid. He's got a plan
6 months ahead now. Yeah.
More than that. 18 years ahead, bro.
18 years, right.
That's how that works.
Whatever. I mean, stuff being what it is, plan 22 years ahead before that kid moves out. I don't remember what we were talking about.
It probably wasn't important. So, hey. We played Smithereens recently.
We did.
And you
told
me we were going to talk about that.
What you been playing, Jason?
Oh, Smithereens.
Hey, we played Smithereens. So, so listeners heard that a few weeks ago. I'm going to take a sip of water here. So, That's fine.
I was really nervous about this, like, spilling out
everywhere. Yeah, they're taking a risk. And then suddenly they can only hear me.
And you were yelling.
Yeah. So smithereens. So you've had some time to reflect on smithereens. Tell me what you thought of smithereens, what your feelings are.
Okay. Well, the most fun part of the game was building the ship.
Yes, was the drafting.
The drafting part was great. And then the second best part of the game was, so when I can't draft without making a plan, right? So, like, I looked at the cards for my limited knowledge and said,
yeah,
my plan is to draw tons of cards and use those cards to do cool stuff. And that worked like one time, because not having guns is a huge problem, which I found out later.
Yeah.
But the good news was the one time it worked, I like blew up two things on your ship in one turn and it was awesome.
It's true.
And then I lost. And then we also figured out that I've been doing the math wrong.
So. Yeah. So maybe you didn't really lose.
I think we were actually probably about tied when we quit.
I think so. And I would have actually slaughtered you, except I rolled like garbage.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because my engine was completely unprotected. You just kept shooting at it.
And kept missing.
Kept missing.
Yeah.
Because I didn't put anything in front of it because I didn't know any better.
Yeah. So, smithereens. So, I still really like the idea of smithereens. The reality of it so far is not at all as viable as I had hoped it might be. It's a prototype that still has potential, but it's got a long way to go.
I think it's got a lot of potential, and I don't think it has as far to go as you think it has to go. But then again, I didn't design the game, so I'm not like married to the idea of how the game was supposed to work.
Mm-hmm.
So like, to me, the biggest flaw in the game was, I had to have a gun to fire.
Mm-hmm.
So basically a gun was mandatory, and I could totally see how you could get hosed and not get one, or get a really, really crappy one. Yeah. Some of the stuff was overpowered in a weird way,
mm-hmm.
but that's a balancing thing. That's not that big of a deal. I mean, you basically had a mega gun that I couldn't get to
right.
that like was going to just ruin my day, and then I blew it up. But yeah, not being able to shoot was not fun. That was the least fun part of the game. You figured out that crew members basically mean nothing.
Meant absolutely nothing.
Except
completely
for fire
useless.
Your gun, which was pointless.
Right, completely useless so, crew members.
But that's good, because that simplifies the game in a good way.
Right. I don't know. I'm just not sure that it's got enough to it to for me to want to keep going on it. I still really love the idea, the concept of it. But the reality so far is pretty thin.
You're just a pessimist.
Well, I see. So you know, and I think builders know this too, that I like to have projects, smaller projects that I can throw up on GameCrafter. And I like to do that a couple of times a year if it's at all possible.
Right.
You know? And so I what I'm thinking about right now is the next game that I can throw up on GameCrafter.
Right.
And
it's just not smithereens.
And it's just not smithereens. Now the other thing that I play tested again recently was Card Game Simulator. We went out to the local board game bar with some friends, and actually bumped into some of their friends there, and so we played a game of Card Game Simulator with my wife, one of our friends, and one of his buddies. So this guy I didn't know. His name was Josh. Didn't know him at all. And it was the first time I've played Simulator since I think the first time you and I played it 6 months ago, five, 6 months ago. It's been a long time.
Yeah,
a long time.
I remember it though. It was fun.
It was fun, and it was fun again.
Good.
It was a lot of fun again. I've made no changes to it since that original prototype, and it was fun again. It was a lot of fun, and it was chaotic and dumb in all the ways that I wanted it to be. But I'm kind of back to the same place I was before, where I don't really know what to do next.
I gave you a bunch of good advice.
Well, here's the thing that
you just ignored it.
Before I start cutting cards from it, I need to see those cards be used, and I don't want to be the one to use those cards. I want to see other players use them because I know how I want to use them.
Okay.
But I want to see other people use them and interpret them.
Can you do two players with that?
I don't see why not. It probably wouldn't be as chaotic and fun. I think if I was going to put it out, I would want it to be, I would list it as 2 to 6, but best with 3+. I would say best through 3 to 5. And I want to try it with 3. I want to try it with 6 if it's all possible, right. You know? But it was fun. It was fun. I think the biggest problem it has right now for me, design-wise, is that some of the cards are just too text-heavy.
Yeah, that was one of the things. But it never bothered me when we were playing. But
yeah,
yeah, some of the cards are ridiculously text heavy.
Right. And so the only way I can combat that, I think, is to just put a reference, you know, put a basic, even a more basic description on the card and then have a reference guide in the rule book.
Right.
And that's less than ideal, but
definitely. But
after you play it a couple of times, you learn it.
Games do it, though.
But games do it, yeah. So I don't really like it when they do that. But if that's what my only option, then that's my only option. Okay,
this is boring me. Sorry.
Sorry. Yeah, I didn't mean to drag you down like that.
Broad topic, right?
What have you been playing?
Smithereens.
That's it. Nothing else.
No.
Okay.
But hey.
Yeah.
You brought a topic.
I have a topic to discuss. Okay, so I was thinking about what I just said, thinking about Card Game Simulator and how many players is it going to work for. So often I either think about two or four, you know,
right.
Two or four. But I want to start thinking about more games that are playable with more players, higher player counts. Like I want to start doing some games that do six. Like I like the fact right. that Finish It...
Can play like up to 42 people.
Well, that's too many. Like did we play a 7-player game or an 8-player game at Gen Con last year? It might have been 8 players, and I think that was too many.
It felt like it.
Yeah, like I think.
I mean, it could have been. You could play with 8 players. You got a lot of downtime.
Yeah. So
one round takes forever.
Yeah, I think what I ended up putting in the box was 2 to 6.
I think
or maybe it was 3 to 6 or. I can't remember what I put in the box, but I think your best bet. I think I put 3 to 7. With you know, best range being 4 to 6,
right?
Ideal. Anyway, I like that it plays with that many people and it has that range, and so I'm trying to think about right now is games that are playable in that range and you know anywhere from 2 to 6 or say 3 to 6. I you know that I don't like to do games that are less than 2. I was okay with less than 3.
less than 2.
I prefer 2. I like a game that can work with 2.
Right.
With Finish It, it made sense because it's intended to be
a party game. Yeah.
You know, so 3 is fine.
Party game. It's a pretty lame party.
Right. So I want to talk about player count and what you need to think about when you're designing in that space and for more players.
Right.
You know, so I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, the thing that always gets me, like, lately with designing is... Like, I make these card games, and I'm like, I want this to be 6 players. And then I'm like, frick, there's not enough cards in this game for it to be a 6-player game.
Yeah.
Like, that's something that I've been doing a lot more in my head, like, counting out, like Mushi Mushi from last time. I was like, mm-hmm. okay, at 54 cards, this is not a 6-player game because you're running out of cards. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be reshuffling every 2 mm-hmm. minutes, and that's not fun. So I was like, I'm going to make it a 72-card deck because I want it to be a 6-player game, if possible.
Because
mm-hmm. It's a game that I don't think would be hindered by 6 players. Yeah.
So that's a good first point. So if you want to, and we're going to be generalizing with some of the stuff too, but
of course.
I mean, but
it's us.
Generally, the more players that you want to get involved in the game, the more likely you are to need more components, more
yes.
game bits.
Well, you mean you're pretty much guaranteed to need more components.
Well, not. I mean, it depends on the style of the game. But
fair enough. I mean, if it was a game where like you had these 6 dice and that's how you play the entire game and you pass them through everyone to play the game and other than that it was a pencil and paper
mm-hmm.
that did not come with the game, you're right. Otherwise, well, you're wrong. Just kidding.
If we're thinking about the more you know, familiar range card games kind of stuff or pieces, moving pieces around kind of thing, then yeah, you're definitely going to need more components.
Right.
Okay. So that's just a purely mechanical, realistic perspective. But what about gameplay wise? Because you have to think in terms of something fell down.
Dude, it happens all the time.
Kids. I guess what I'm kind of getting at is I often think in terms of even numbers. Two or four. And I often forget to think about odd numbers, 3 and 5.
Right.
You know, 3 and 5 players.
Which can be rough in certain games.
It sure can, yeah. So I struggle with planning for that. Not that I think about things always pairing off and working in teams, but I'm always in my brain, I'm thinking about about two players. How would two people interact? Well, honestly, I'm always thinking about how are two people going to interact with each other in this in a situation.
That's your deal. Yeah.
And I think about two, and then that easily multiplies to four.
Right.
But when I try and put an odd number into that mix, it messes my brain a little bit, and I really don't even know what to expect about how that's going to work in testing.
Right. Yeah, I don't think about that much either until it happens. Like, and I'm like, oh crud.
Okay, great.
I mean, so I don't really adjust until I have to. But there are some games where I really struggle with what do I do in an X player game. Honestly, one of the things that I struggle with most is two players. Because unlike you, I usually design for four.
Yeah.
So even though a game says 2-4, I don't mean it's fun 2-4, right?
Oh, yeah. Right.
So, I mean, it means you can play the game 2-4, but it doesn't mean it's fun. And so that's something that I've struggled with in the past, just being like, all right, this is 2-4, but I struggle with, like, there's only two players. You know, like, trick-taking games are a good one. Like, I've been kind of into the idea of trick-taking games lately, and... trick-taking games classically do not work well with two people. You need three to make it viable. And that just infuriates me because if I'm designing a game like that, I basically say, okay, well, it's got to be 3+, you know, and that annoys me. When I see a box that says 3+, I'm annoyed.
Yeah.
Even though I know that it may be a subpar experience at two. You know what I mean? I'd rather have the option for that subpar experience. Which is stupid, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it's pretty dumb. Well, my hope is that it works. I always hope that it does work with two. And I'm always disappointed when a box says that it's when a box says a certain number of players, I expect it to be fun with that number of players. Which is the thing that always made me, and I've used this example 1,000 times, this thing that always makes me mad about King of Tokyo.
I know.
Is that the two-player game is bad.
I think with a couple tweaks, the two-player game is super fun.
Well, that's the thing. You have to house rule it to make it fun.
There's nothing wrong with that, though.
Well,
I think this is the deal, right?
Yeah.
The question is, can you play this game with two players? The box is saying, yes, you can. It's not lying to you. And it's not their job, technically, to tell you the game is less fun with two players.
I mean, technically, most game boxes don't even say that this game is fun. They're just saying, this is some stuff that you could do to spend some time if you wanted to.
Here's an activity you could do for 2-4 players.
That involves some decision-making occasionally.
Perhaps. Or dice rolling.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just roll and move. Maybe it's Candyland. So one of the big considerations to think about, other than these things we're talking about, is what about downtime?
Yeah.
Because, like, so Finish It is that's usually with eight players, it's funny because downtime is either a big problem or not a problem at all. And here's what I think of the difference is. When you're playing with a group of people, if they're all really funny, it's not a problem at all.
Right, because you're listening to other people's stories and it's fun.
You're trying to think of your own story and you're too busy laughing at their stories.
Yeah.
But if you were with a group of duds, those seven people that are there talking before it gets to you, not fun.
Yeah, you're right. And that is kind of one of the natures of games of that type, storytelling games and kind of silly party games like that. If you're playing a party game with people who are not fun to have a party with, you just go home.
Right. Or don't play a game.
Don't play that game, at least. Yeah. Right. Somebody's crying upstairs.
Yeah. They probably can't hear us.
Okay.
I mean, like, the listeners probably can't hear the kids crying.
Oh, I bet they can.
Yeah. Really?
I bet they can, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, I can hear it. I mean, I can hear it through my headphones, not through my...
No, I guess I can hear
it. Yeah, right, yeah. So they can hear
it. Once you pare this down, though...
Well, we'll
make
see.
It lesser quality.
I don't know.
If you can hear it, sorry.
Lower the bit rate or whatever that's called, compression.
Sorry if you can hear that.
Yeah.
Anyway. Normally they're not in that room. Whatever. My kid's not having the best day, so.
Yeah, it's okay.
And one of them cries, the other one feels the need to join in.
It's because that's what all the cool kids are doing.
A chorus of terribleness.
Like a poisonous player.
Yes.
When one brings it down, everyone has to bring it down. Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's something to think about, too, is downtime. And also, you know, something else to think about is, you know, you worry about things like runaway leader and stuff like that. In a six-player game, that's runaway leader, I would say, is less likely to happen in a six-player game because you have so many checks and balances of five other players.
Yeah.
But runaway loser is just as likely to happen in that game because, you know, I think it is. And then you add downtime to that, and now it's even less fun.
Yeah.
You know, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that is a problem. So if you're working toward that kind of goal, you think about maybe make your decision simpler, you know? The more you can reduce AP, or the opportunity for AP, the speedier things will move, and the faster you'll get through the game.
Right.
And eliminate that risk of downtime.
Because even in a four-player game, man, like Catan, that can be one of the worst things about Catan is a player being like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, we don't care, just do something.
Just do something, anything, so that we can move on with this game, yeah. Yeah, the last playtest I did of Saloon Tycoon, one of the players, Mike, that is one of the few things he does playing a game that just kind of drives me crazy is he gets AP over the simplest decisions. Oh, it makes me so crazy.
And I know Mike, and I'm not surprised.
Yeah, the simplest choices, and I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know where his brain's going, but it's frustrating.
See, and that's where, like, because I have that, like, in life, I'm super indecisive.
Uh-huh.
But see, here's how you fix that for Mike, because this is what fixed that for me in games, is do some competitive gaming where you can't stall.
Yeah.
You have to decide. Like, and it forces you to learn to just go with your gut. And sometimes it's wrong, but at least you made a decision. Yeah. So that's what he should do. Get him to play some competitive stuff.
Okay.
You know?
Get him into Magic.
Yeah. 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 That's what I suggest for everyone.
D&D minis. You're wearing your Dreamblade t-shirt.
I'm wearing my Dreamblade t-shirt, man. I got this free. I have like six of these that I got for free.
Nice.
So. this game, man, when is that? When was that game? Like, that game was out in like 2008, maybe?
Was it?
Yeah. It was the year before HoboCon. So 2007, right? What was your first year at Gen Con?
Yeah, 2007.
That was the last year I played
in
a tournament. So, wow.
Crazy.
Yeah. So that was 2014 now, so 7 years ago. It's 2015. That'll be 8 years ago this year. Wow, 8 years ago. That's crazy stuff.
Since the last time you played Dreamblade.
Yeah.
Wow.
I still have all this stuff.
I know you do.
Yeah. I plan to teach my kids someday.
Someday.
It's a fun game, man.
I'm sure it is. I believe you.
Yeah. You would actually, I think, enjoy the game.
Yeah.
Except for you wouldn't want to play it in a tournament because you'd want to punch people, but...
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think
it's
I would
fun.
Really want to play that.
It's a fun game.
I just... Yeah. I don't know. Hey, I need to get my Dice Master stuff back from you. If that guy's not going to buy any of it...
I don't think he is. Oh, I don't even know what this stuff is. I mean, it's here. Don't worry.
Yeah.
It's with my Dice Master stuff.
I mean, I spent money on it.
I'm not sure where that is.
Main thing is I want my dice bag back.
Right.
Yeah.
I do have it all.
Yeah.
Somewhere around here.
Somewhere. All right. That's probably enough of this topic, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, how about you pitch a game?
Okay. I don't know. Okay. I'm going to pitch a game called The Last House in the Lane.
Okay.
This is a solo game.
Oh, yeah. I remember you talking about this.
Yeah. This is a solo game about a person, a paranormal investigator that goes to investigate the last house
paranormal
on the lane.
Things.
An old haunted house at the end of the lane.
Okay.
Or I'm sorry, I was saying the last house on the lane. That's wrong. The house at the end of the lane.
Okay.
The house at the end of the lane.
Yeah, last house on the lane sounds like last house on the left.
Right, that's my brain.
Which I'm pretty sure is a terrible, terrible movie.
I saw the remake and it was
pretty
horrific.
Terrible.
I think, well...
It's pretty brutal.
Okay. I think I saw the first half of the
and
remake.
And then you were like,
I was like,
I'm done watching this.
Don't need that. Yeah.
I think that in that movie... I think it's that movie. Somebody blows someone's head up in a microwave.
Could be. I don't know.
Doesn't work, I don't think.
No, it doesn't. I mean, that's their safety thing so that doesn't happen. Yeah. But
I think that happens in that movie.
Could be.
And actually, I've never seen the movie, but it was like a thing where somebody had like, it was talking about what would actually happen if they put a person in a microwave, and then they were using movie clips to show what movie said would happen.
Oh.
And that movie was in there, and so was Kick-Ass, where they put the dude in the big
wood microwave thing. Yeah.
And he explodes.
I bet you wouldn't actually explode.
No, they said you would not. Yeah. They said you would just cook from the inside out.
And die.
Yeah. You would still, net effect.
Yeah.
Bad place to be.
Right. But. Yeah. All right. Good topic of conversation.
Hey, so last house on the lane.
No, the house at the end of the lane.
House at the end of the lane.
House at the end. Right. Okay. So I decided to give this a try and just go full Slingerland with it. Okay. So
full Slingerland with it.
Full Slingerland. That means this game is a game that requires an app on your phone to play.
I've never required that.
You've, but what I mean, full Slingerland is that I'm just going for it.
You're just gonna go for it.
Just gonna go for it. Not even care. Not even think about component or production or anything like that. Okay. So this is a timed, call it a speed solo game.
Okay.
Okay. So it's a timed game. So, partial inspiration taken from Escape the Curse of the Temple. Okay. You have an audio track that's playing. That is of certain time limit, and depending on the difficulty of the game you want to play, you might play a different timed game. You know, maybe easy is 15 minutes, hard is 10 minutes, and ultra hard is like 7 minutes or something. I don't know.
Right. Okay. Okay.
And you choose that option on your phone, on the app of your phone. But the other thing, well, I'll come back to that. Why it's an app and not just an audio track. I'll get back to that. Okay.
I know why.
You know why, but the builders don't know why yet.
Okay. I wonder why.
Well, I'll get to that. Okay. So I got to bring my notes up here. So the game, the solo game. So you're an investigator and you have gone to investigate the house at the end of the lane. It's an old haunted house. And you go inside and then everything blacks out.
Whoa.
And then you wake up and you're lost somewhere in this mansion. And you're in the room and you can't open the doors. There's seems to be some kind of mystical, paranormal energy that has trapped you in this place.
Okay.
Okay. And you need to try and escape. So, you have your character, you're going to have like a little player board, right? And it's going to have, it's going to have your character on it. You can carry with you two pieces of investigation equipment.
Okay.
And picking those pieces of equipment is part of the setup of the game, part of, you know, deciding what you're going to go into the game armed with, right? You know, say your PKE meter and your EVP detector or whatever. Okay. So, different options. Again, to tie with difficulty.
Sure.
And you would probably program those things or tell the app which items you're using and would adjust the difficulty to go along with that. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. That's future thinking. Okay.
Sure.
Now, on your belt, you have a battery pack. And both of your pieces of equipment connect to the battery pack. Anytime you want to use one of your pieces of equipment, you have to spend a point of energy, electricity, to use that item.
Okay.
Okay. Now, also on your belt, you have a canister. This canister carries ectoplasm. Okay?
Nice.
All right. So you start the game. You don't have any ectoplasm. As you go, you need to collect ectoplasm. Okay, ectoplasm.
That's not like a trademark term.
No, that's a thing. Ectoplasm. It's a thing. I don't know what the definition of it is, but
they made up for that movie.
It's not for Ghostbusters. No, I mean it existed before Ghostbusters.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's you know, a physical manifestation of paranormal stuff. It's some kind of material that bridges the physical and the spiritual world.
You know, one of the greatest things in the world is
what?
Ecto cooler.
Yeah,
man, that stuff is good.
It's the best. It is the best.
They don't sell that anymore, do they?
I don't think so. Oh, well, you know what? Hey, Ghostbusters is coming back, so Ecto Cooler might come back. Ecto Cooler might be coming back.
That would be the best thing about Ghostbusters. I don't even need to see the movie. No. I could drink Ecto Cooler.
I can drink Ecto Cooler.
Just like pure sugar.
That'd be so great.
Ecto Cooler's had slime around the thing. It's the best.
I know.
My mom would be like, what kind of drink do you want? I want Ecto Cooler.
What a dumb question, Mom. Yeah.
Like, come on.
Come on. I want to drink a glass of ghost goo.
I felt like Cartman, like, yeah, I want the cheesy poofs. Yeah, like, yeah, I want the Ecto Cooler. So anyways, keep going. Sorry.
That's fine. Okay. So as you're playing the game, you're going to collect ectoplasm. You can use ectoplasm in a few different ways. You can use it as armor. So on your character,
that sounds gross.
So, well, it is, that's the point, right? It's part of it. So, you know, you have like a health scale, you know, call them hit points, whatever. Maybe you have 5 hit points. I don't know, 5 or 6. And if you get attacked by a ghost, which is something that will happen, and we'll get to that. When they attack you, they're going to take health off, call it sanity, call it fear, whatever you want to call it. But you have your little health meter. But if you smear yourself, cover yourself in ectoplasm, then when the ghosts attack you, they are repelled or it resists their attack or their affront you defend yourself with the ectoplasm. Okay.
He's so, blinded me.
Yeah. So you would reduce damage. You would lose ectoplasm armor first. Okay. But you also need to spend ectoplasm to activate things, activate exits of the room. So in the beginning of the game, you have your character pawn on a square tile. And say this is a 3x3 square tile, okay?
Okay.
All right. And the first string tile always has four doors on the four sides, okay? And all four of those doors are sealed. And you need to spend some amount of ectoplasm in order to open one of those doors.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to go back to my notes here to make sure I tell you specifics. Okay. The game is played by laying a square room tile on the table. That room will have one to four doors, one or more investigation icons, and a difficulty number. So the investigation icons, one, two, three, maybe even four investigation icons. These correspond with a deck of investigation cards. These are essentially items that are in the room that you can investigate with your equipment. Okay.
Okay.
So, you lay down, the first time you go into a room, you draw however many cards there are, investigation cards, and you put them face down on top of the tile or next to the tile, whatever. Okay. And then you then choose one to investigate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's see. In order to flip the card over and reveal the result, you have to use one or more of your pieces of equipment and add its modifier to a die roll.
Okay.
So each piece of equipment has its own little modifier. The result of this roll must be equal to or greater than the difficulty number on the tile. Okay. Each time you roll, you must spend the electricity cost of the equipment. So you can keep rolling as many times as you want until you succeed. But every time you do that, you have to spend electricity. You have to drain your battery to do that. Equipment allows you to spend additional resources, electricity or ectoplasm, to boost the modifier to your roll. So depending on the piece of equipment, you can up the amount of electricity used, or you can add ectoplasm to the reaction to do a better job of investigating. Once you eventually succeed at that roll, you can flip the investigation card over and reveal the result. Maybe you can collect more ectoplasm from that. Maybe you can recharge an item, recharge electricity. Maybe you get some kind of bonus card you can use later in the game, that kind of stuff. Okay? Some kind of benefit. Some investigation cards may be ghostly obstacles that you have to deal with before you can continue. So it might be a trap of some kind or a ghost web that you get stuck in. I don't know. Whatever. Weird ghost stuff, right?
Ghost web.
Yeah. In order to move to a new room, players have to spend the difficulty number of ectoplasm to open a door. Later, players can always move freely between unlocked doors, but they must spend the ectoplasm cost each time they want to unlock a new door.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So I'm in the starting room with four doors. If I want to leave this room, I have to spend the ectoplasm cost to unlock the ghostly barrier on that door and move into the next room.
Right.
And then I'm going to take a new tile and lay it down.
Right.
You know, and then move on from there. And if I can go back as far as I want, but I have to move my pawn back. And if I'm going to go through another door that I haven't used yet, I have to spend the ectoplasm and go through that. Okay.
Yep.
As soon as you enter a new room, you put the number of investigation cards down. You don't have to clear all the investigation cards if you don't want to. All you have to do is collect enough ectoplasm to get out of there.
Okay.
Okay. The game is going to end where eventually one of those investigation cards is going to be the front door, and it's going to have a really high ectoplasm cost in order for you to unlock the door and escape. Okay.
Okay.
You need to, you want to be prudent about make sure you're looking at all the cards, because you're not going to notice the exit until you've fully investigated it. And successfully investigated it, and then you need to spend the ectoplasm to get there. And it's going to be shuffled in somewhere late in the deck, but not at the end of the deck. So it may be out in a room, and you may just not flip that card yet and keep exploring. Okay? So it's an exploration experience. You never know when that's going to come in. I think that's all the basics of it. So let's talk about getting attacked. The reason why this is a phone app and not just an audio track is that randomly, while the audio is playing... Oh, and then, of course, the other thing is you need to get out the exit before the time limit expires.
Right.
Otherwise, you descend and you're captured by the ghosts and you're dead and whatever. So,
okay.
Randomly, throughout the soundtrack, the app will occasionally play a scream, just a blood-curdling scream. And whenever that happens, you have to stop whatever you're in the middle of and you need to flip over a ghost card.
Okay,
and that's a hostile ghost that's attacking you. And as soon as it attacks you, you're immediately going to take whatever damage is on that card, that ghost card. Either take and lose the health damage or lose your ectoplasmic armor, right?
Okay.
And then, again, you have to use your equipment. You have to roll against a difficulty rating on that ghost. And you can flee from that room if you want to. And that would be another roll you'd have to make, but it'd be an easier roll to flee.
Right.
But then if you ever want to go back into that room, you're going to have to fight the ghost again. If you fight it and you fail, you take damage again, and you keep going. You either flee or you keep going until you defeat it. But if you defeat it, you're going to get some kind of a big boost of some kind, okay. Of big bonus score. Okay. So that is basically the whole game.
That makes sense.
You know? So you're investigating these rooms. You're trying to manage the charge level on your battery. You want to make sure you have enough ectoplasm to use for things you want, but also save enough so that you can get out the exit. You fight off ghosts when they attack you and deal with obstacles as they're revealed as you investigate them, and try to stay alive and get out before the time limit runs out.
Cool.
That is the House of the Invul Lane.
I would suggest that some of the ghost cards should actually damage your battery. So that's always the thing. Ghost hunters will be like, oh, my battery just died.
Instead of draining your life, it would drain your battery. That's a really good idea.
I mean, there could be multiple, you know what I mean? Like, so, yeah. Sure. I have to say, when you said you were going to make a game about ghost hunters, I assumed you were going to make a game about dorky ghost hunters not finding ghosts, because that sounds like the game you would make.
Oh, you're right. Normally that is. That's why I went full Slingerland on this. Yeah.
Nice.
So yeah, so I think it's a fun idea. I mean, it's the kind of thing that I could probably scale into a cooperative game for two players or something. It's probably possible.
You know,
I don't know. Just up the difficulty and you know, just adjust balance in general.
Right.
But I kind of like the idea of it being a solo game.
Yeah.
And I mean, realistically, making that app would probably be pretty easy for a person who knows how to make apps.
I would think, because I mean, you've got music. And then at random times,
just a sample, a scream sound, some kind of sound effect. Yeah, so I feel like that would be pretty easy to do.
Yeah.
And just, you know, for free, anybody who wants to, you can download free. Yeah, who cares? As long, if you're buying a copy of the game, you can get the, the app's not going to do you any good if you don't have the game.
Right.
So, but yeah, I think it's kind of a fun idea. I was thinking about Snowplow. I kind of enjoyed the challenge of that, but Snowplow is just so simple and kind of such of a boring theme.
Right.
I thought, I wonder if there's anything else I can do with solo that maybe is a little more interesting to me personally.
Nice. Yeah, that's cool.
So there you go.
Sounds like fun.
And one thing that I was in doing this and thinking about a timed game, Escape, I love so much. And mechanically, it's just a mega simple game. The only thing that makes that game exciting is the random die rolls along with the time limit and the hurry, the rush of it, and the fear of not getting out in time. So I think that fear and that stress could translate really well to a thing where you're trying to escape a haunted house and ghosts are attacking you.
Yeah.
I think it's a very natural connection with that.
I agree. Yeah.
So.
Sweet.
House at the End of the Lane.
Nice.
Cool.
That sounds fun. I mean, I wouldn't play it because it's a solo speed game, but whatever.
Yeah.
So we have one email here from Thomas. From Thomas. And he has emailed us before. This is a long email.
Ooh.
He admitted that he combined a lot of thoughts into this. So we only have one email, so that's great. So I'm gonna skip around here.
Okay.
So Thomas, if I did not read it verbatim, please don't be offended. But yeah. It starts off with, first of all, I wanted to, that was the wrong part to start. he said, I've always had a little bit of a love-hate relationship with your podcast because some shows you have amazing ideas and great discussion, and other shows I want to pull my hair out because the pitch seems so randomly thrown together, or you know very little about the subject. The most recent example was Jason's trick-taking game, in quotations, War Stories, but luckily I wasn't the only one who thought that wasn't a trick-taking game. But don't get me wrong, I love your show, mostly because you inspire me, and the shows where I hate your pitches are usually the ones where I have my best ideas. See? We do that on purpose.
Yeah, of course. Totally on purpose.
So maybe your pitches are always brilliant. See? just not always the way I personally would want to play them. And you guys are really honest, and you don't pretend that everything is golden or that you're all-knowing, and I do feel that you often bring new perspectives that way. Well, thank you. That is honestly what we're trying to do. All right. Since I listen to so many of your podcasts in a condensed time, so he listened to about 25 in a short time, he said, I have a lot of comments.
Whoa, that's too many.
He's just going to list them chronologically.
Okay.
So I'm going to read through some of them. I've read through all of them, but on the show, I'm going to read through some of them.
Okay.
Episode 130, your Four Doors game pitch. That was one I pitched about a game show, Medieval Times.
Yeah.
I thought your game was a very interesting idea and still lacking some polish. That sounds like me. But it seems to me to make one big mathematical error. Your idea was to have X players and X plus one cards. The idea was there were doors they could open. Your thought process was the last person would always give the door to someone else if there was no extra card. Now, while it is true that the last person could open the door and find treasure because the monster was discarded as an extra card, it is mathematically unlikely, and that player should always give the last card away. Under that assumption, no one up to the last player opened a monster. In the four-player game, there's an 80% chance the last card being a monster. It was funny to me because you discussed the Monty Hall problem and being such a chaotic game with risk reward, and you need to introduce more uncertainty to add more cards. Or make the number of monsters per round unknown, perhaps. There's also a game called Tobago that shuffles treasure cards and deals one to each player, and the extra are shuffled, and then they are shuffled together again with one extra card. Now each person has a little bit of knowledge and can make an informed decision. That's interesting. That's actually how I had it in Transylvania Trading Company.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Your board game Miser pitch for gold for in episode 132 about gold bricks. Just a quick comment because every movie gets this wrong. Gold bricks weigh 19.3 kilograms, which is more than 40 pounds for you Americans. So please have vehicles in your plot. No normal person can carry more than two, maybe three gold bricks very far by the end of the game. He's right. I think that's hilarious.
That's funny.
Episode 133, The Fighting Game. This is you.
Okay.
I know by now that's for you've had several revisions, but I have one small suggestion. Instead of discarding three cards at random, which cards to discard this way, choose which cards you discard because that's more strategic. You have full control over your starting hand. Your opponent has a chance to guess what your starting hand is. That's kind of an interesting idea. The idea that, like, instead of randomly discarding three on that first turn, you say, I'm going to keep these, discard the other ones face down.
That's essentially just like starting the round with all seven cards.
Well, it is, but it's not. Because you have to make the choice without knowing what your opponent's doing.
Oh, okay. That's a fair point.
I think this is actually a really good idea because no one can complain that they got hosed by random cards.
Yeah.
Right? Takes an extra 1 minute at the beginning of the game, but I think that's a really good idea. I like that. It's not my game, but I like it. The off-the-cuff racing game with chicken feet hobbits. Yes, I totally believe you, Jason, when you said that pitch was planned. It didn't seem especially crazy at all. Then again, I have listened to all your episodes, so your antics don't shock me much anymore. It's a cool idea that you made something out of it, and also you were totally wailing on Formula D. Just because you kick it under the table when you think no one is looking makes no difference. Side jabs still count. Fair enough.
Yep.
One more comment about a game here. Rocket Records. I really like your idea for the game and all. Although now I am confused. Now I am never sure whether you are talking about Rocket Records or Rocket Records. Which one did you take to unpop? Rocket Wreckers.
Wreckers as in wrecking.
As in wrecking. The rockets flying through the air.
Yeah. Yeah. On that one, that is actually going to be the next one that I prototype. Now that I've got Smithereens out of my system. Not that it's out of my system, but I did something with it and I tried it. I need to go back to Rocket Records. Also, I need to change the name because of that confusion, and also because Rocket Records is the name of Elton John's record label. So I need like Speedy Records or something. I gotta just change the name. So anyway, go on.
And then the last section here is a compliment for you, kind of.
Uh-oh.
Writing rules. I personally understand that you hate writing rules. It's a long and thankless job. But I must disagree with you, Rob, when you said you were not good at it. Specifically, your rules for Rocket Wreckers were very good. They were very clear, precise, and best of all, as lean as possible, but no leaner. They were a pleasure to read, and I had the game down in one read, and that took less than 5 minutes.
Wow, thanks. That's great.
And believe me, there was no way... There's no way something you find in every game. That's not something you find with every game. I have read the rules from hundreds of published games ranging from good to awful, and your rulebook is definitely on the good end of the spectrum. So don't worry. You obviously know what is important. Maybe you could even make a discussion topic. What are good rulebooks and what makes them bad? That's a good topic.
That's a great topic. Yeah. So, yeah. Let's remember that for next week.
So he's got some more stuff for us here. This is more specifically for you, so I'm going to forward this on to you so you can read it.
All right.
And
thanks, Thomas.
Yeah, thank you, man. And I know, you mentioned before that sometimes you send emails and you feel like they got lost in the shuffle. They very well may have. We actually have a really good system now. So as long as you send an email, it's very, very unlikely it will get lost. Mm-hmm. One of our big issues, we never cleaned out the email box. So I was always like, is that new? Is that old? So now... we get an email, it's gone after that. I've archived it after we've talked about it on the show. In fact, I sent yours to Rob just now and then archived it.
Good.
So yeah. All right.
Okay.
I think that's it.
Well, it sounds like the world is ending upstairs, so we should probably end this here.
Yeah. I don't know what's happening up there, but it does not sound good.
Yeah. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We appreciate it. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastBTG. Jason is @JASlingerland, and I'm @poorly_design. You can like us on Facebook. You can give us a 5-star review on iTunes. You can go to our website, buildinggamepodcast.com, where you can get copies of Water Balloon Washout, the Rumpelbum Academy for Bug-Based Baking, Epic Monster Tea Party, and finish it, the Outrageous Storytelling Party Game. You can also listen to a bunch of old episodes that are no longer available on iTunes, and we highly recommend that.
Yes.
Like us on Facebook, give us a 5-star review on iTunes, vote us up on Board Game Links, and come on back again next week, and we're going to be doing more of this stuff, because we don't have anything else to do. Good night.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
138. No, 148. 148.
148!